Hello and welcome to The Rate Debate. I'm Darren Langer, co-head of fixed income at Yara Capital, and joining me as always is my co-portfolio manager, Chris Rands. Well, it's the first Tuesday of February and the first meeting for the RBA in 2023. I'm hoping everyone had a nice holiday and are well rested. So the RBA today, 25 points, as was probably largely expected. You know, I made the big call last one that they wouldn't go again, but I think the last CPI probably blew that that call out of the water. Bit surprising that the RBA seemed a little bit spooked today by perhaps that number, and they seem to have got the number they forecasted, and then it seems to be worrying them a little bit. Well, what did you sort of read into the decision today, Chris?
The rate hike, I think, was broadly expected by the market, but I think the big change that I saw was in the statement kind of feels a little bit more hawkish than they were at the end of last year. So in the statement, they've changed from saying that rates need to rise in the period ahead to now be saying that it needs to rise in the months ahead. That just feels a little bit more urgent than what they were saying in December. So even though it felt like they were setting themselves up to maybe pause or slow down, they've kind of come back with a little bit more of a hawkish message. And you can only assume that that's because of the inflation figure, which came out at 7.8%, which, you know, we were discussing is a little bit weird because they were forecasting 8 anyway. So they're getting more urgent, even though the number came exactly as they expected it.
Yeah, the other thing that I thought was a bit strange is that you know, the market seems to be a bit upset by the fact that they're still forecasting 4.5% inflation by year end and only sort of down to 3 by the end of 2025. This is an RBA that can't forecast CPI one period ahead. I think, you know, to expect them to be able to do 6 to 18 months ahead is probably unlikely. So I would take anything the RBA says about forward inflation with a grain of salt, and I think that's fair for most of us, but you know, everyone seems to hang off their ability to forecast CPI, and they really haven't done a great job of it. Yeah, I was there anything else really in the statement?
I think the only other thing that kind of jumped out from the statement was the fact that they've been acknowledging that monetary policy is working with a lag, and they actually said in the statement that some households are experiencing painful increases to their budget due to higher rates and the increased cost of living. So they know that it's going to be slow to work. They know that there's more pain to come and that some families are starting to feel the pinch. And even with that, they're saying the next few months we've got to go again. So a bit of, I guess, a dichotomy in what they're saying in the statement, but it does seem like inflation is what they're watching, and let's go.
It's a bit unusual because, you know, as I say, you know, to actually have something work with a lag, you have to stop and see what's happened. And in past rate cycles, even where they've gone fairly hard quickly early on, they've then stopped and waited to see what happens. This time, they just seem to be, you know, like the Fed, you know, they're just rolling on without stopping and actually seeing the level of damage. I think, you know, from what we can see, most forward-looking data is starting to come off or is starting to look pretty awful, but they're not really acknowledging that, and they're just going, employment's still good, inflation's still high, we're going to keep hiking. So again, monetary policy in the rearview mirror perhaps.
Yeah, and the market has felt really jagged with the way it's been trading because of some of the information that we're seeing. So kind of as you said, inflation strong. You had strong payrolls out of the US on Friday night, which gave the market a big move. But if you kind of think back over the past month, we also had weak retail trade in Australia. We've had weak business conditions, and we had a soft employment report in Australia. So basically, every time there's a weak report, the market wants to rally pretty aggressively. And then when you get these strong reports, the market wants to sell off very aggressively. And so it does feel like the market is very much trying to come to terms with what they should be doing. And the RBA is just saying, no, it's inflation that matters, so don't worry about it.
It's a good segue into sort of looking at what happened throughout January. I mean, the January period was a pretty good period for bonds. It was probably the biggest, you know, move, positive move in bond yields we've seen for some time. The one thing when I came back from holidays and sort of looked at it and thought, well, I'm relatively bullish on things and think that they're eventually going to have to bring rates lower, but the market seemed to get a little bit ahead of itself, and I think that's also partly probably the impact we've seen with the payrolls number. And today, you know, markets have sort of gone, well, yeah, maybe we did get a bit too ahead of ourselves. What else do you think's been sort of driving bonds at the moment?
I think when you look at where we are now, there's kind of two ways to think about where rates could go and what they can do. So if you look at the prior rate hiking cycles, you can kind of split them into two groupings. So in 95 and 2010, after the RBA had hiked, the cash rate stayed at its peak for about 12 to 18 months. And in that environment, bond yields were anywhere from about 25 to 100 over cash in that environment. So if you think the RBA can keep hiking rates and that they're going to be able to hold it here for 12 months, then bond yields at kind of 3.5%, 4% are a pretty attractive level to think about. The alternative to that, though, is in the rate hiking cycles of 2000 and 2008, the cash rate stayed at its peak for only 6 months. And what happened in that environment was the three started pricing the future cash rates really aggressively and really early. And so in that environment, the threes ended up about 100 points under cash. So I think that's why the market is kind of jagging and moving around at the moment, because if the RBA can fulfill what it's saying and hold the cash rate high, then bond yields are probably slightly too low. And if the RBA needs to reverse course, which is probably what we're thinking, that they've gone a bit too hard and they're going to damage the economy and they're going to have to move back the other direction, then at some point over the next kind of 6 months, the threes will want to rally aggressively to do that. So I think that's why it's becoming so neurotic on the data that confirms one view or the other. If it's weak, all the people that think they're going to have to cut probably come forward. And when it's strong, the people that think that it needs to be higher come forward and say, oops, you're wrong.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that we're sort of seeing that's probably a bit unusual, bonds are generally considered a low volatility asset class. You know, I did some calculations when I came back, and monthly volatility over the last year or so in bonds has been over 2%. Generally, you'd expect monthly vol in bonds to be somewhere between 60 to 80 basis points. Sometimes it's a bit higher, but that's generally what it's been, certainly in the last 10 years or more. So not only are we getting, you know, some fairly high yields, we're just getting a lot of movement. And I think to some extent, you're seeing that in the market data as well. Something I read the other day was saying that, you know, standard deviations of a lot of market stats are probably two times what they were in, you know, prior to the pandemic. So not only are we seeing impacts on markets, but even the underlying data is extremely volatile, whether that's pandemic-related data collections or whether something fundamentally has changed, you know, market data just seems to also be very volatile, which is, you know, causing these fairly large ructions in markets. You know, maybe it starts to settle down. Maybe it's, you know, related to inflation. I don't know. But it's certainly been, you know, extremely unusual conditions to see this kind of volatility. So, Chris, inflation we've seen, particularly in the US, is starting to look a little less frightening. It's not only the US, but even more globally. Australia didn't really seem to have an inflation problem as soon as the US did. Are we really just running 6 months behind what's happening offshore? Or do you think we are going into a period where the RBA should be concerned about higher inflation than perhaps the rest of the world is experiencing?
It's obviously hard to tell, but if you do look at the timing of when Australian inflation started to pick up, it was lagged to the US. And if you look at the peak now of our inflation, if you assume that we just moved past the peak, which is probably very likely, it looks to be about 6 months lagged behind the US. So certainly it does seem like we should be moving past kind of the worst of it. So that as well is kind of, I think, why when we spoke earlier that it's a little bit surprising that the RBA forecasted this high number and is now getting surprised by it. But when you look at the US lead indicators, which are a bit more thorough and better to use because there's more of them, quite a lot of those are now showing that inflation's probably going to start falling from here. So you've got things like the small business surveys of prices paid. That's starting to drop pretty aggressively. You've got commodity prices and oil prices lower. And as well, you've got wages starting to show signs that they've peaked as well. So all of that is saying that inflation in the US is probably going to start slowing from here. And if you assume that we are just 6 months lagged behind the US, then I don't think that we should be overreacting now on the idea that we're going to be shooting off on our own direction when the RBA acknowledges that a lot of the inflation that we've seen in the domestic economy is coming from offshore.
What about the China factor, I guess? Some of the stuff we see is that China is starting to reopen its economy after being closed for so long. That's going to help the education sectors here. It's going to help tourism. Is it enough to make a difference? Or is the fact that if China does reopen, they start exporting deflation again, and that also helps some of the problems? Because obviously a lot of the supply chain effects that we saw in the early part of the pandemic were related to China. I mean, I don't think it's an easy thing to figure out, but do you have any sort of thoughts around that?
I guess there's kind of two things. It's hard to, I think, draw the link between it, but firstly, China inflation is still relatively low. It never showed the jump that the rest of the world made. And producer prices in China have been falling as well. So if you were to think of Chinese inflation as a lead indicator, then it's not showing any signs. If you look at some of the other metrics, whether it's, you know, tourism coming back to Australia, that still hasn't picked up yet from China. So potentially not. But the other big thing is, if you look at China, the credit impulse is generally a lead indicator that people use, and it's not picking up either. So yes, the economy is opening up. Yes, it should be positive, but this has been a story now for 6 months that everyone's been waiting for this to kick in and build up. And the lead indicators are just not really showing anything that you'd be worried about yet.
As we mentioned, you know, January was a pretty good time for bonds. I mean, probably the latter part of 2022, very few bond style strategies were working. Most things were highly correlated in a bad way. You know, there wasn't a lot of sector rotation that was making sense. Rates were all moving one way. Spreads were all moving one way. You know, it probably was just the most ugly conditions that I've ever seen. What have we been doing, I guess, through that latter part of December and early January to sort of position the fund for these sort of themes that we think will happen over the next, you know, 3 to 12 months?
Yeah, so I guess one of the biggest kind of drivers that kicked everything off at the back end of last year was swap spreads blowing out. So that's probably going to be a little bit niche for the listeners, but essentially what happened because of that was the spreads of credit and supranational issuers widened pretty aggressively to government bonds. So there was one stage there where, say, a major bank 5-year bond, they were issuing at about 150 to 160 basis points over govies. So at the back end of last year, we basically extended the credit position. We extended the supranational and the semi-government position. And what's happened over the past, I guess, 2 months is those swap spreads have normalized a little bit. There's been a little bit more positivity come into the risk markets, which saw credit spreads come in. And we've used that to reduce some of those credit and supranational positions a little bit. But those spreads are still sitting at relatively attractive levels. So for the fund, it's basically looking to maintain and hold 5-year credit, hang on to kind of 10-year semis and supranationals, which are sitting at about 80 basis points over govies, and then hold an overweight duration position as well, because any of our listeners probably know that we think that the RBA is a little bit incorrect here.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too to note is we've had a bit of inflation protection in the portfolio, not because we particularly were thinking that inflation was going to blow out from here, but mainly because the inflation market seems to be doing its own thing. It's actually been one of those markets where it's been pretty cheap relative to perhaps what you would expect. Normally, if you want to think of the inflation market as an option on inflation, you know, it's actually been quite cheap, and it's actually ended up, you know, contributing quite well to the portfolio for the mere reason that it's been cheap, not necessarily because we've seen, you know, really lots of inflation, which is a little unusual. But I think, you know, some of that's starting to come to its end now. And you know, you probably always got to be a little bit careful if you really are forecasting lower inflation, sort of stay away from some of those instruments. But yeah, it's certainly been a much better time. And I think we're starting to see some of the relative value in fixed income markets become a little bit more normal. I think the volatility is still going to be a problem over the next, you know, 3 to 6 months. And, you know, you really have to pick your moments of when to dive in and do things. Sometimes you can be right and wrong all on the same day, but it's certainly keeping us on our toes.
Yeah, and I guess one last thing to put in perspective with the spread positions is that we've been also talking, I guess, a bit about a recession potentially coming. And historically, you would expect spread and credit to underperform quite largely in that type of environment. And so even though we think the economic indicator is pointing that direction, if you look at credit, for example, it's as wide as it was when COVID first occurred in March 2020. So you have very wide spreads that are compensating you for some poor economic performance. If there's a big global downturn, you'll probably still wear negative performance through that period. But it's setting up to a point now where there's a lot of kind of spread built into these that can compensate for some of that risk.
Which is unusual perhaps in past periods where we've had periods of long duration sort of spread assets, which have ended up hurting portfolios, but you've actually been able to buy relatively short assets at pretty cheap levels, and it's made good sense to hold that.
Yeah, and the curve is also very flat, so you can kind of buy 3-year assets at very high yields compared to what you've seen over the past 10 years, and so we've been trying to take advantage of that.
Well, that's it for this month. If you ever want to suggest topics or discuss anything further with Chris and I, we can be contacted at theratedebate@yarracm.com. So tune in next month when we deliver our latest thoughts on the RBA's March rate decision and provide an update on what's been happening in markets. Until next time, stay safe.
The Rate Debate podcast content may contain general advice. Before acting on anything in this podcast, you should consider your own objectives, financial situation, or needs, and seek the advice of an appropriately qualified financial advisor.